Good Saturday afternoon to you. Hope you're having as good a day as I am. About this time, I have a college graduate on my hands. Goodness gracious, live time flies. Parents, if you don't know it yet, I mean, those of you who have got the little ones who are keeping you up all night, enjoy those times. They don't last very long, and then you forget about them. But yeah, obviously I'm not in the studio today. I am in Charleston celebrating graduation with my daughter and my wife and my youngest daughter, and hopefully you're having just as good a day. Hopefully you've got outside a little bit. It's the time of the year to get outside. It is so nice out there. It's going to get hot, but hey, that's when you just start doing stuff early in the morning, late in the evening, or at night. Night fishing. Hey, fish bite at night, too. But anyway, I appreciate you tuning in to the show, and we'll apologies to those of you who were listening last week that wanted to hear Patrick Walters and I talking. Figured out that when we had to record that conversation, because Patrick's obviously was headed to Texas to for the Texas Toyota Fest or whatever they call it now with Bass. And so we got a hold of him beforehand, and what we did is we record those conversations, and we just saved it to the file. We didn't go back in and clip the front end and the back end, because we talked beforehand a little about some other things. Then we talked at the end of the conversation, and we just forgot to go back. So for those of you who listened last Saturday and heard the blank space and then heard me start talking about a phone number, I apologize for that. We fixed that this week, and we're going to hear from Patrick after the bottom of the hour. So it is a great conversation, and Patrick's just a great kid. He's a young adult now, and you know, hey, if you're like me and you tune into a little bit of fishing, you have the BPT is on Smith Lake this weekend, the FLW is over on Chickamauga this weekend, and Bass is at Lake Fork. So if I was in the studio today or at home or whatever, I would have three screens up and I'd be watching fishing on something and trying to figure out who to have the sound levels on for. That'd be the only problem, is checking which one you want to hear the sound for. But yeah, it's a busy weekend in fishing, and you wonder if, you know, in the past when you had FLW and Bass, you won every once in a while, you'd have a tournament on top of another one, maybe two a year. But it seems like this year, and maybe it was because it's the first year and they're working on, you know, their schedule for next year and all that, maybe after this initial year with the BPT, maybe they'll all play nice together and schedule their tournaments not where all three of them are all fishing on the same weekend. It makes it tough to really enjoy, you know, if you're watching Brian Latimer over on FLW, or you're watching Patrick or Brennan or some other guy on Bass, or you're trying to keep up with Andy Montgomery and Anthony Gagliardi and MLF. It really, when you have these piled up, they take away from the enjoyment of watching the fishing tournaments. So anyway, just my commentary. It was funny, I was trying to figure out that word, commentary. I was riding the tractor last week, and I wanted to do a commentary, and the only thing coming to mind was obituary. I was like, no, Walter Cronkite did not do obituaries. He did some other word I could not remember, but commentary it is. So that's my commentary on the three fishing tournaments scheduling their stops all over each other. Let's see what I want to get into. Well, let's do the calendar of events, because I got something I want to talk about in the second segment. It's going to take longer than 5 minutes. So, brought to you by Visit Anderson Green Pond Landing and Event Center. There, we have a really cool place right down here in Clinton, South Carolina, called the Woods Runner School of Self-Reliance. He's been on this show. I need to have him back on. Goodness gracious, if I have some open time, I will. They have all sorts of gatherings and you know, classes and fun things. They are having May the 11th and 12th. It's a two-day course. It is the Wilderness First Aid Certification. This is for those of you who want to know what to do, and maybe you're a scout troop leader, or you lead group hikes or something. This is something you may want to do. So in the case of emergency, you know how to handle all this stuff, but it goes on. The 18-hour interactive course is designed for anyone who spends time in the wild or for anyone who has an interest in improving their medical skills. Class size is strictly limited to 20 students, which means you need to go ahead and figure out if you can get in or not. For class, bring a comfortable chair, clothing suitable for the conditions, a notebook, and a headlamp. Day and night scenarios are a critical learning tool for this material. All classes are conducted rain or shine. Come prepared. The curriculum covers basic anatomy and physiology, patient assessment, skills, recognizing and treating soft tissue injuries, muscle and bone injuries, head and spinal injuries, thermal injuries, recognizing and treating shock, medical emergencies in the wild, bite stings and envenomations, that's snake bite for you and I, environmental exposure, emergency carries, and improvised lifts and more. Food and lodging, there's primitive camping available on site for this course at no additional charge. Water is available on site. Meals are not provided. So get a hold of the Woodrunner School of Self-Reliance and take part. And if you go to their Facebook page or their website, they have a bunch of events scattered all through May into June. In fact, coming up here shortly, they got a Woods Runner Shindig Low Country Bowl coming up the end of May into June. I will be there. Trust me. If there's food involved, I'll be there more than likely, and other than having to spend the night in a tent. But anyway, that's something you can do. Go to their website. They got a bunch of stuff going on. And like I said, I have to get him back on here. He was a really good guest. Continuing on with the Department of Natural Resources fishing rodeos, we covered through May the 4th. Now we're covering May the 11th. So on May the 11th, you can take your pick of Draper Wildlife Management Area in York County, Forest Hills Subdivision in Cotton County, the Jimmy Shea Memorial Fishing Rodeo at Lick Fork Lake, Edgefield County, Lake Cooley in Spartanburg County, Goose Creek Rodeo in Berkeley County, Lake Thickety in Cherokee County, Lake Warren State Park in Hampton County. And those are all morning, like 9 to 12, 9 to 1. In fishing rodeos, if you don't know it, you show up. They have stocked ponds for you to fish in. It's limited to 16 and under, 15 and under, 5 to 15-year-old participants. Parents, you are welcome, but you cannot fish. In fact, parents, you probably need to be there. They're held rain or shine, and they do provide some tackle and some bait, but they encourage you to bring your own. And you do need to go online and pre-register for the rodeos because they will close up to 72 hours prior to the event. So, fishing rodeos, May 9th through 11th. I saw this when I had to do it. Does anybody know what Batesburg-Leesville is famous for? Sheely's Barbecue. Well, it's also famous for the South Carolina Poultry Festival. One morning in 1986, members of the Leesville Merchants Association flocked together to hatch the concept of a town festival. It was Sarah Sheely, famous throughout the region for extraordinary fried chicken. This thing is so shot up with puns. Served in her Batesville-Leesville restaurant, who courageously proposed the development of a poultry festival for Lexington County community. And so you can go down there on May 9th, 10th, and 11th. They said it transforms itself into a population of over 100,000. During that weekend. But a hearty blend of Southern hospitality, true American spirit, and they got all sorts of fun things going on. There are scholarships, of all things. And they say they proudly host the number one world's best chicken cooking contest. Which, okay, I'm in for that. No problem at all. But check it out. South Carolina Poultry Festival, Batesville, Batesburg, Leesville, South Carolina. That's over between west of Lexington, out towards Edgefield, in that area out through there. So, just a good family time to go enjoy some fried chicken. And that's your calendar of events. And when we come back, we're going to cover, we got river grants for Saluda River Access, snakes, summer rules. I like this one. And I got an article about Alvin Taylor, the retiring director of South Carolina Department of Natural Resources. Hang on through the break. More Woods and Water, South Carolina on the other side. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. I don't know what happened, but this article is from March of 15. Well, that's a reprint or a misprint or something. Anyway, we'll cover that one. We might have to investigate that one a little further. I love this. This is somebody sent this to me, I think, 2 years ago. And it's called Summer Rules. It's just really funny. And a lot of you probably grew up this way. And a lot of you probably ask your kids about this every day. But it's pretty cool. Take a listen to this. Okay. Summer Rules. Have you, 1, made your bed? 2, brushed your teeth? 3, brushed your hair? 4, gotten dressed, had breakfast. Okay. Those are have yous. Those are what you should do every day. But anyway, that's summer rules. Plus, it goes additional here. Have you read for 20 minutes? 20 minutes of reading. How about an additional 20 minutes of writing or coloring? How about clean up one room in the house? Not their room. That ought to be a given. Clean up another room in the house. Have you played outside for 20 minutes? You gonna walk the dog, you know, whatever. Sometimes that one for me is letting them sit down and swing outside. That's good outdoor activity. Have you made, built, or done something creative? How about have you helped someone else in the family? Have you helped mom or dad? And here's the kicker. After all of this, then you can use your electronics. I like that one. You know, just gives them a break. From the social media, the texting. Gosh, the texting just drives me up a wall. Okay, enough of that. I'm not going to get started there. Stuff I want to get to. Okay, Director Alvin Taylor. This is a news release from the Department of Natural Resources. And if you read the state newspaper article, it said Director Taylor quitting. And it's interesting that I cannot find that story on the state newspaper website. But it was an article by the state, says South Carolina Department of Natural Resources, Taylor quitting. No, Director Taylor is retiring after 42 years with the Department of Natural Resources. He's retiring. He's not quitting anything. And I'm still waiting for a reply from the state newspaper. I fired off a little angry little thing to him saying, you know, he deserves better than that. And your own story mentions that he's retiring, but your headline says he's quitting. So, got a beef with. I said there's a reason that print's dying, and you're causing it yourself. But anyway, yes. After a long and storied career spanning 42 years with the Department of Natural Resources, including 7 as its director, Director Alvin Taylor has decided to retire. You know, the Department of Natural Resources was one of my first sponsors here. They are still a sponsor. They have increased their sponsorship of this show. And I appreciate it. One of the honors it's been is getting to know Director Taylor. You know, over the years at ICAST, at various Department of Natural Resources meetings, the latest one right up here at Sassafras Mountain when ribbon cutting was held on that. But it's been an honor getting to know Director Taylor, and he's going to be missed. He's just a likable guy. It says Taylor leaves behind a legacy of lofty accomplishments after helping the agency recover from historically low budgets and annual downsizing. A few of his accomplishments, and you've heard it here, under his watch, the DNR has built a youth shooting sports program that is really second to none, including clay target sports and archery almost from the ground up. The program now reaches more than 44,000 students in schools and clubs across the state. Just last year, the Clay Target Sports Championship Trail of Skeet, Trap, and Sporting Clays established a Governor's Cup top prize to recognize the best in high school target sports. Besides mentoring and safety and conservation offered to participants, shooters have the opportunity to compete for more than $125,000 in college scholarship money through this program. Taylor has also worked to protect more land for the agency's Wildlife Management Area and Heritage Preserve programs, totaling more than 1.1 million acres. That can be used by all the citizens of South Carolina, including hunters and anglers. During his tenure, the DNR, SCDNR, took on the job of protecting the Watery Heritage Preserve, made up of Cooks Mountain and the old Goodwill Plantation in Lower Richland County, as well as the Liberty Hill Wildlife Management Area on Lake Watery. The agency worked with the National Wild Turkey Federation to build the Palmetto Shooting Complex, where some of those target sports takes place, which is a world-class sporting clays facility in Edgefield, followed by the Watery Range and 8-station sporting clays rifle and pistol range alongside the Watery River between Columbia and Sumter. Just this year, Tall Pines Wildlife Management Area along the South Saluda River in northern Greenville County was dedicated as the newest property, offering hunters, anglers, hikers, and wildlife watchers more opportunities to head outdoors in the upstate. It goes on to talk about some of his roles. He most notably led the South Carolina Quail Council as chairman of the steering committee and the agency's renewed efforts to restore bobwhite quail in South Carolina in sustainable, huntable numbers. The effort already has produced success and offers much more hope for the future of grassland birds in South Carolina. So, upon your retirement, Director Taylor, I hope you have a great time. He mentions grandkids in there. Boy, those grandkids. I've known a few of my friends that do stuff like this for grandkids, and they don't seem to regret it. So, congratulations, Director Taylor, and much happiness and all on your retirement. I have another article here on DNR wanting to move its headquarters. But one of the things that jumped out at me as I was leafing through some stuff this week that I had stacked up was, feral hogs. It's their problem here in South Carolina, problem all across the Southeast. But this was an interesting article that ran across my desk, literally. Texas is losing the war on feral hogs. And what was interesting about this, because just a couple weeks ago I was down at the Savannah River site, and one of the guys I rode around with during that turkey hunt was a biologist. And the U.S. Forest Service, their role at Savannah River site is really feral hog control. And they shoot, capture or whatever, over 2,000 hogs a year down there. And so we were talking about it. He's actually the one that talked a little bit about this before this article came across. And this is from Wide Open Spaces. But it goes into some detail that he talked about, too. He said, despite years of intense hunting and trapping, Texas is losing the war on feral hogs. Since the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department first began removing feral hogs in 1982. So what's that? 82, 92, 2002, 30, 40. Getting close to 40 years now. The Lone Star State has dramatically increased, and now there are more than 10 times as many hogs in the state as there were then. Unfortunately, the evidence is clear. Texas is losing the war on feral hogs. Now, yeah, they're losing the war on feral hogs, but when you're charging $2,000 to $3,000 to go fly in a helicopter to shoot feral hogs, and you're charging big money to go nighttime hunting of feral hogs, which we're doing a little bit here in South Carolina and Georgia now, it's becoming a business. And they're not interested in really eradicating them, because the really only way to eradicate a hog is to trap it and to trap the whole group, which is what we were talking about down at Savannah River. And he was talking about how smart the hogs get to the trapping efforts, to the shooting efforts and all. So it's pretty interesting here. But Texas has very permissive regulations regarding hog hunting, and hunters may pursue hogs all year long with no bag limit. They may be hunted over bait, trapped, hunted at night from aircraft. As a result, get this, it is estimated that over 750,000 hogs are taken by hunters, trappers, and TPWD each year in Texas. Unfortunately, it's not enough. And this is a staggering little bit of number crunching here. Even though hunters and trappers are killing approximately 30% of the hog population in Texas annually, hog numbers are still growing by about 20% each year. Biologists and wildlife managers estimate that 70% of the hogs in the state will have to be killed each year just to maintain the population, and even more must be killed to actually start reducing their numbers. Now, it is a fact that hogs can reproduce quicker than, if they're under pressure. So, yes, you read that right. 7 out of every 10 hogs in the state must be killed just to keep the numbers where they are now. So why are wild hog populations experiencing such explosive growth in this portion of the United States? And you could say that a little bit about South Carolina. We have a hog problem here, and there's no way to keep them in check. The main reason is that hogs breed almost as quick as rabbits. They become sexually mature before they are a year old and can produce as many as 3 litters of 6 to 8 piglets every year. Another reason they are difficult to control is because feral hogs are very intelligent and resilient animals. They quickly respond to hunting and trapping pressure by changing their habits or just leaving the area for greener pastures when things get too hot. Since they are known to roam over extremely long distances in search of food, this makes long-term hog control measure difficult and complicated. Landowners and biologists have been relatively successful in controlling feral hog populations in small areas. However, they are usually short-term successes and only last until a new hog sounder moves in and the cycle starts all over again. While wild hogs are fun to hunt and provide some very tasty table fare, they cause all sorts of problems. They're rooters. So they go after roots, acorns, tubers, other plants, and they eat literally anything they can find or catch. Crops, snakes, insects, ground nesting birds, turkeys, which we've seen a huge decline over the past 10 to 15 years in the southeast, and even deer fawns are not safe from a hungry hog. Goes on, in addition to competing directly with deer for food, they damage vegetation that quail and turkey need to thrive. They're also carriers of nasty diseases, and there have even been cases of drinking water sources becoming contaminated by droppings from feral hogs. Some have established that Texas is losing the war on feral hogs. That's clearly a bad thing. However, what can be done about it? Hog hunting and trapping are already going full bore in Texas. Poison's been touted as one potential way to turn things around, the war on feral hogs. However, the use of the Dr. Kurt Verkaderen came on and talked about the big hog poison they were coming up with, the sodium nitrate poison, that kind of fizzled because of a delivery problem. So, what do we do until a permanent lasting solution is developed? We'll have to deal with hogs the old-fashioned way, by hunting and trapping as many as we can. So hit the woods and start doing your part in the war on feral hogs. Now, it's interesting that you do have a business of hog hunting, and when it becomes a business, as much as the farmers complain, they do have a vested interest in keeping those things around. So, but it's funny, at the same time that article hit, there's another article from Missouri. I think it's Missouri. I have to look back and see, but I think it's Missouri. They want people to quit shooting hogs. That, you know, it's they realize the problem in Missouri too. And so it'll be interesting, but yeah, Savannah Riverside, they kill over 2,000 a year, and they're not even making a dent in that population. So it's another problem, and it's interesting the correlation between that and the turkey decline, which I think not many people talk about, the hogs and the effects they have on the turkey population. So anyway, interesting. We'll have to see what comes of that one. After the break, you're going to listen to Patrick Walters and I, who is leading the Angler of the Year and Rookie of the Year on the Bass League side. You're going to hear the interview that should have played last weekend. Enjoy it. I'll be back with a short wrap-up at the end of the show. Well, the stars aligned finally after, I don't know, 4 or 5 years of being around this guy. But he is a rookie on the Elite Series this year. He's a South Carolina native from Somerville, South Carolina. And, man, Patrick, we had a great time on Santee the other day.
Yes, we did, Roger. I mean, thanks for the phone call. Man, sure. I'm happy to be here with you guys today. You know, I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Yeah.
And especially after last Sunday, I figured it can't get any better.
That's exactly right. Man, what a year so far. I mean, going into last fall, you were triple qualified through the Opens. Then we had the MLF break off from Bass. You were sitting in the catbird seat. You got the phone call, and everybody knew you were going to the Elite Series. And, man, you have made yourself front and center.
Well, That was a lot of drama that went on in that month prior to get my invitation with the MLF thing. And everybody was talking about, you know, somebody's got to fill their shoes. But the way I looked at it the whole time was, hey, I'm bringing my own shoes to the
Absolutely.
Dance. I'm not going there to fill anybody's shoes. It was no matter what, I was going to try to get to that level, regardless if the split didn't happen. And it's been a phenomenal year so far. What we've done is just kind of rolled that momentum over from the Opens, from the College Series. And you couldn't script this year off any better so far, you know. Starting with St. John's, we had a great tournament. And then moving on to Lanier. And it's hard to beat when you have two tournaments in your home state.
Back-to-back.
When we at Hartwell and then Winyah. It made it a lot easier on that drive home.
It's kind of like cheating.
It was. It was definitely a little bit of some familiar water that I was happy to fish.
Yeah.
And the tournament didn't set up necessarily how I wanted to. Especially Winyah Bay, I was really hoping the fish were going to be more pre-spawn or hard or post-spawn.
Okay.
But just that time of year, it hit the dead in the spawn, and you got to fish a little bit different. I knew after the first day of practice at Wynyaa, I didn't really have a chance to win, that all I needed to do was just put myself in contention and just fish what I could fish and try to make it. And I was surprised at how low a weight it took, actually, at Wynyaa. I thought it was going to fish a lot better than that. But that just shows you tidal water during the spawn, it can be pretty tough.
Now, you made the run all the way from Georgetown to the Cooper River, right?
I did. It was actually over 4 days of fishing the tournament on Wynyaa Bay. I ran over 850 miles round trip.
In a boat? It was
in a boat. That's like going from South Carolina to Okeechobee. It was a haul.
But, man, you got the boat for it.
Oh, I'm telling you, that Falcon and Yamaha, it barely sips the gas. But to tell you the truth, the main thing was the boat. You know, it's a F215. It's a 21-foot boat, and it really handles that big water well, especially when you have to cross Wynyaa Bay and then the Charleston Harbor, and you're passing yacht boats. I mean, there's 30-foot cruisers. Then you pass the Yorktown, and there's a cruise ship coming out. This probably is not the place for a bass boat.
No. But which amazes me that you got to run all that way down there. Okay, St. John's, man, what a great way to start off the year. Fourth place finish. Did you have those expectations going into that tournament?
You know, every tournament, looking preseason, yeah, you have those expectations. You're like, hey, I got to catch them. You think you can catch them. And then I actually have fished two college tournaments there previous to that tournament. And during those two tournaments, actually, we fished nothing but shell beds. We fished the main river.
Okay.
It was a little bit colder time of year, so I had some expectations going into that tournament that I was going to be doing something completely different. And then as the weeks kind of got closer and the tournament was coming upon us, I kept looking at the weather, and you could see that the forecast was going to be good. And then we had a full moon coming up.
Yep.
And so I was like, well, you know what? I probably need to swing for the fence a little bit and go find some more spawning fish.
Mm-hmm.
Try to get away from the river fish, because the river fish are definitely more pre-spawn, wintertime kind of stuff. And I had a horrible practice. And those are usually the ones that you do well in, as you don't expect it.
I've heard
the
that
first day of practice, I had 3 bites. The second day, I had 5 bites. And then the final day of practice, I had 2 bites. So I was just going fishing during the tournament. I said, hey, I found some fish on the bed, and whatever happens, happens.
Okay.
And I started on day one. I caught 3 fish on the bed, and it's like 11:30, and I said, man, I got to do something different. And I went to one little area. I had 1 bite in, and I caught 13 pounds. I was like, hey, man, this is pretty good compared to practice. And then you come back, and at the end of the day, you're like, man, these guys caught them.
They did.
And so day two, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go hammer on that hole a little bit better. And then ended up catching like 23 pounds.
Yep.
And I was like, well, day three, I better go do the same. And then caught 32. It was, and that third day, I'm telling you, that'd be a day I remember for the rest of my life. The sad thing was the guy at Rapala, JD, that morning, he said, Patrick, let's put a GoPro on your boat. And I said, man, JD, I'm telling you, I don't want to put a GoPro on your boat.
No.
That's probably bad luck. I don't want to chance it. And we didn't put a camera on the boat that day. But hey, we caught him, so that's all that matters.
Exactly. Wow, yeah, that was an interesting fishery. I'd never been down that way. And to follow you around for a little bit on Sunday was really cool, except when you started off across the big water and chop, and I was like, yeah, we're not following him.
Oh, my gosh. tell you the truth, and I didn't realize this until the other day, but I've had 2 top 10s so far this season, and they were both in the tidal body of tidal bodies of water.
Yes.
But that fishery down there was way different, and the wind on that final day was
brutal.
Yeah, I didn't even want to be running in it. It was that bad.
Yeah.
But to tell you the truth, the main thing with the first part of the season, too, was I feel like there's been some error in my fishing a little bit where I haven't executed to 100%. So I can tell there's room for growth, and that's what gets me excited, because I'm not fishing flawlessly yet. You know, if I was fishing flawlessly and everything's been perfect,
sure.
And it's like you got nowhere to go but down, kind of. I'm kind of really looking forward to this because, hey, there is a lot of room for improvement, and there's a lot of things I'd like to change. And so I'm really looking forward to the second half of the season and just kind of getting everything lined up and just going fishing. You know, I'm not worried about yesterday and what happened the day before, and I'm not worried about tomorrow. I'm fishing just one day at a time and worried about today.
You know, you're not to jinx it or anything, but it's a fact you're leading angler of the year. your leading rookie of the year. And you said something the other day about rookie of the year. I heard somebody interviewing you, and you talked about that rookie of the year, you have a one-shot chance at it.
That's true. It's a feather in your cap that nobody can take away from you. You know, you're only a rookie one time in your life. And so my goal this year was, tell you the truth, it was to shoot for AOI. If I can get Angler of the Year, I'm going to get ROI.
Sure.
And it's these guys are just that good. You can't really lay up and just try to be consistent and just try to shoot for ROI, because if you do that, somebody's going to pass you. That's the name of the game. Everybody's a sportsman. Everybody's, this is what they're doing. This is their profession. So yeah, these guys are good. And every tournament we're going out there, we're just going to catch them as much as I can catch that day. I'm not fishing against anybody else. It's just, what can Patrick catch today? And it's keeping the foot on the gas.
And you mentioned something right there. This is a profession, because when you and I were fishing the other day, we were talking about this swing you're fixing to take out to Texas and then Oklahoma, and then you're actually fishing an open. And I said, now, why are you fishing an open? And you came back with, look, this is what I do. I'm a professional bass fisherman. It's a tournament. I can win some money here. I can improve, and this is what I'm going to do. That mindset, I think, is what surprised me the most about our fishing together and catching up the other day.
It really is. You know, a lot of guys, they'll fish just one trail or this, but the bad thing is I can't fish anything local at home anymore, you know, due to rules and stuff. Like, once you fish a big-time tournament, you can't fish that stuff. So
right.
For me, I plan to fish for a living. I want to do this 365 days if I can, and it makes the sponsors happy. So it gives me an extra chance to make the Classic, and it gives you that extra advantage to say, make a little more money if you can catch them. But the guys in the Opens, I'm telling you, they're not slouching. It's harder to win an Open than it is an Elite Series, probably. It's just, when you're fishing against 200 guys and they're the best local six on each body of water, it keeps you on your edge. And that's what I love. It's just going to new bodies of water, learning a different type of fishery, and just keeping that competitiveness there. It's fishing as much as we possibly can.
That's great. Okay, you got Texas Fest, or Texas, the next one.
Yeah, the TTBC, the Toyota.
Yeah, Texas the old Bass Classic, yeah. And then you get a run-up to Grove, Oklahoma. What are you looking at for those two tournaments?
I'm thinking those are actually going to be some really fun tournaments. The good thing is I'm a bank feeder. I love to fish shallow, and I've kind of looked at the forecast a little bit. There's been some rain going on out west, and so I think the lakes are going to be rising out there a little bit, and so the fish are going to stay shallow. And that's my goal, is to go out there and just fish my strength. You know, I don't mind fishing deep, and I will fish deep if there's a good bit of fish out there.
Okay.
But anytime I can fish shallow, I'm going to take advantage of that. So I'm thinking there's going to be a good shad spawn going on. There's going to be some fish on the bed at Lake Fork, and there's going to be some big fish caught. Be on the lookout. I think there's going to be a couple 10-pound fish caught.
Oh, wow.
Hopefully I'm one of them.
Yeah.
But, it's fishing. You truly never know. And then when we go to Fort Gibson, I think it's going to fish more of like a river fishery.
Okay.
I'm going to say 15 to say like a 19-pound bag is going to be a good day.
Okay.
Like, it might take 17 pounds to win that tournament. And tell you the truth, I kind of like the way it's setting up. I like to junk fish, and I like to run in the back of a pocket, and there be one log that's in a little bit deeper water up on the back of a one-foot flat. That's okay. The kind of stuff I like to fish, just ugly stuff where my dad always said if they could take me to a mud hole and we'd do good, because I'll just fish anything. Like, if it's in front of me, I'm going to fish it. So kind of just fishing off-the-wall stuff, just in the dirt. That's the stuff I like to fish.
All right. Now, when you run in, here's a question for you. When you run into the back of a pocket and there's that one ugly log in there, what are you going to throw on that log?
It really depends, especially on time of year. I'll probably start out with like a topwater, whether it's a buzzbait or a walking topwater. And if they're really eating, I'm going to flip a jig on it. And then if they're not really flipping the jig, sometimes I'll switch to the Texas rig, soft plastic, like a brush hog or a Z-crawl, something like that. And then, of course, if you have to get a bailout, you always have the wacky worm in your back pocket. Just in case. Hey, Roger, you don't know about that worm, do you?
No, I have no clue what a wacky worm. What's that? It's like we got down there on the mulcher the other day, and you were trying to tell me how to fish, and he's like, you got to be skinning trees. I'm like, do what? He says, you got to be skinning trees. In other words, the wacky worm got to hit the tree, slide down the trunk into the water, and that's where the fish are.
Oh, yeah. If you're not skinning bark, you're not catching fish. That's just how it is here. You know, with the water so clear, and there's only such a little shadow on those trees sometimes, and those fish will just be hanging tight to it. They're spawning it. They're hanging around those trees, and it's just got to be as subtle as it possibly can. And that's why if the wind really picks up and it gets cloudy, you can go out there and fish a spinner bait or, you know, flip a jig around. But it's hard to beat that spinning rod. It is. It catches some big fish.
Oh, we caught some good ones, and I caught on, and you were a great teacher. I appreciate the patience. But it was like I told myself, I said, dadgum, I'm hanging up so many times. But really, if you weren't hanging up a few times, you weren't fishing in the right place.
That's exactly right. There's so many roots around those trees. You really just kind of got to be up in there. Hey, and you saw it. Sometimes you can get hung up, and he's going to come grab it off that, off that root for you.
I kid you not, folks. We were fishing. Patrick's in front of the boat, and he skips that wacky worm up against it, and it was an exposed stump, wasn't it? I mean, it wasn't a tree.
Oh yeah, it was just wide open.
Yeah, and he says, I'm hung up, and we were talking or doing something, you were trying to flip it off, and the fish took the worm off the tree stump as you were hung up. And Patrick's like, huh, I got
was,
one.
That definitely caught me off guard.
It did. Fun times. While we're on the subject of Santee, talk just a little bit, because I had never been down there. Such a diverse, I mean, we were fishing on sandy bottom, then we were back in lily pads, and that's where you grew up, so it's kind of your home waters. Talk just a minute about Santee.
Yeah, Santee is definitely my home pond compared to, like, say, the Cooper River. That's where I've spent majority of my time. And what I love about Santee, it has so many different faces. There's so many different, and what I mean by faces, it's, there's so many, the cartography is so different there where you can go up in the swamp above the 95 bridge and it's just a flooded forest and you're flipping trees all day. And then you go down the lake a little bit and you're fishing isolated trees and you're fishing lily pads and gator grass. And then you can go out and start fishing depressions. You can fish bluffs, ditches, brush piles. I probably already named everything three times in a row, but it's just, there's so many different things you can do out there. And it's truly just figuring the subtle things out. Sometimes it's just an irregularity, which is more popular than not. Where, say, if you're fishing a forest of trees and there's every tree looks the same, if there's one tree that, say, it's broke off or it's kind of fallen over, it's at a 45-degree angle,
yeah,
that's the kind of stuff you get bit on. And you can see when we were there, it was trees that were, say, just a little bit deeper than the other trees around them. So there's always something a little bit different and some variables kind of you looking at, but that's truly why I love Santee, because it's got such fertile water and the fish can grow so big there. There's so many different ways to fish it and there's just such large fish there. It's hard to not like it.
And if you're not catching, you can always take pictures of ospreys and alligators. Oh, and I checked that snake out. It was really weird, people. We were fishing. Like I said, we're fishing these isolated cypress trees and all, and we were on one, and I don't know if we were just kind of drifting by it or whatever. We're kind of close, and I kind of looked around the edge of the tree, and there's a bump there, and I'm like, what is that? And turn it, there's a snake looking at us. But
and when he said looking at us, it was 2 feet from the boat. Yes. It was a little closer than I like to be.
And it was, you know, it was giving us the tongue lash and the look and all. But, Patrick, I did go back and look at the eyes. It was non-venomous, so... And it's just a brown water snake.
Was it really?
Yeah. Yeah, I was surprised.
I didn't trust it, though.
No.
Every snake's been this for me.
Well, we all talked about when the split came, bass obviously learned some lessons or decided they were going to do more for the anglers than ever before. And you have been, I guess, with your finishes, a rookie, just your personality is a great one. You've really enjoyed a lot of coverage, not only from bass, because they've been to your house and filmed. You've had Wired to Fish there. You've had it. Talk a little bit about some of the exposure you've gotten and some of the things you're looking forward to.
It kind of caught me off guard. You know, I've always, my favorite thing about fishing is I like to be the underdog. Nobody knows who you are. You just come out of the blue and you just catch the fish and like, who was that guy? The bad thing this year, they've kind of took that element away from me. And I can't thank them enough for that. It's really been a great year with publicity this year with bass. They really have that fire kind of lit under them where they're going to make everybody who's fishing bass right now great. They're going to make them a star. Everybody's got a story. And they're looking to tell it now. And that's what's great is they're giving all 75 guys coverage. every day they're sending them photos, and it's truly without them we wouldn't be where any of us are at today. They're helping us do that. And with Wired to Fish coming to the house, we actually did a shoot with Rapala and Santee Cooper, and that was a great time. It was eye-opening kind of seeing how the behind-the-scenes stuff works in the industry. You know, how do you make these fishing videos, the promotion videos, and the how-to videos? And actually, here's a little sneak peek. I actually got to film a Zona show with Mark Zona himself on Santee. It's going to be coming out in January, and it was a good day. It was about like me and you had, Roger. There was a lot of setting the hook.
That's good. That is really good. And I watched a Wired to Fish video with you and Spinnerbaits the other night.
Oh, they released that?
Yeah.
I haven't even seen that one yet.
Yeah. I mean, it was good. I'm not going to go around with a bunch of 3/8s and spinnerbaits and rig them in the boat and different blades and all. But, I mean, it was fun watching it. I'm sure a lot of people out there, if you go to Wired to Fish and you want to watch Patrick and spinnerbait, and he'll 5 minutes of the best.
Tell you the truth, Roger, I'm about to go check that video out. I have not seen it yet. We did a bunch of videos when they were here. I guess they weren't going to tell me when they aired them. But it really is something spectacular to shoot those videos. Because, tell you the truth, I feel like a lot of times you learn more about your techniques and how you fish and better ways to approach something when you teach it.
When you slow
down and you talk about it and you break it down, you're mainly what it is you're just saying it out loud. And so you kind of see it from a different perspective. And when I'm talking with you, when we're fishing those trees, I can get pretty impatient sometimes. It sounds that way, but it's my main goal is, hey, all I want you to do is I want you to catch every fish you can. So, I kind of make it like, hey, it's a team effort.
Sure.
It always is. And that's what this sport is in general as well. It's bass fishing. You really can't do this alone. You have to have a support group. Yeah. And, Roger, I can't thank you enough for that. You have come to a very many of the tournament support, Geddes and I, and Follow Me Now on the Elites and following Brandon. And bringing that media and helping us out with that,
sure.
That really does mean a lot. And just having everybody behind you, it truly does help a lot.
And it goes far deeper than that. Your mom and dad, they are all in for you, and it's good to see them because they follow you around too.
Oh, they do. They really do. They have been the most supportive parents that have helped. It's just so hard to get into this game sometimes, and they've been behind me and supported me. You know, when I told my mom in high school, I said, Mom, I'm going to become a professional fisherman. You know, she didn't laugh to my face, but I think she laughed behind me when I left the room. But now that kind of we've got to this level, this is what dreams are made of, just going out there and going fishing and creating goals, having a plan, you know, what do you want to do, and just kind of writing it down, jot it on paper. Just if you have goals, write it down, make a plan, and I can promise you can get there.
Well, I only got compared to Emily once while we were fishing. I suppose that's pretty good.
You got compared to Geddes, though, a couple times.
I knew his name was going to come up. Actually, I got slammed because I was worried. I told Patrick, I said, all I want to do is really go out and catch a fish. And he said, wait a minute, you're not talking to Geddes here.
he was putting the pressure on me. He said, I just want to catch one.
That's right.
And Santee in the springtime.
You knew.
When the fish are everywhere and they're on the bank, I knew. I hadn't been out there in about 2.5 weeks, but I knew we were going to catch them.
Absolutely, we did. Well, look, Patrick, I appreciate you donating some of your time to me. Be careful on the road. We'll be keeping track of you. Folks, if you want to keep up with Patrick on the road, at every tournament, you can go to Bassmaster.com, watch live updates, and like I said, he'll have pictures every night, bass supplies and pictures, so keep up with social media. You got a good website out there, Patrick. You want to give that to us too?
Definitely. It's actually just patrickwaltersfishing.com, and that's Patrick Walters Fishing. That's my Instagram and my Facebook page, and I can't thank you guys enough for all the support and following along in a tight line. Hopefully we can have a great rest of the season on the second swing.
South Carolina's been blessed with a bunch of good fishermen, and we got another young crowd coming along with you and Brandon. Luckily, Geddes has gotten into his line of work that suits him best, running his mouth. And it's worked out good for all of us. But, Patrick, thank you, sir. And anytime you want to come back on here, just let me know. And anytime I want to go fishing, I'll let you know how that.
Definitely. Hey, I'll be back soon. Thanks, Roger.
Thanks, Patrick. Talk to you soon. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. It's been a really quick ending here. Hope you enjoyed that interview with Patrick. We had a great time down on Moultrie catching some bass. That snake really freaked us out, though. I got the picture, and I looked at the picture, and I got even more freaked out. But luckily, it was a non-venomous snake. After looking at the picture, I determined it had round pupils. Well, speaking of which, what should you do if you come across a snake this year? Here we go. Springtime is the time of the year we all look forward to. The cold winter is behind us, and we can spend more time outdoors in the bright, warm sunshine, but we aren't the only ones enjoying the change in the weather. Snakes are out. And for some, they're terrifying. One of my good friends from high school found a snake skin in her yard, and she freaked out. Look, snakes are just as afraid of you as you are of them. So, humans are one of the numerous predators they encounter, like any wild animal. If a snake feels threatened, it will defend itself. This shouldn't be confused with showing aggression, though. If the snake is left alone, it will eventually leave. There are 38 species of snakes in South Carolina. Only 6 are venomous, and a lot of them are really good. I mean, if you got a king snake around your house, you're probably not going to have any copperheads, because king snakes will eat a copperhead. So, if you see a snake, just give it some space. Enjoy it from a distance. And that's it for this week. I'll be back next week with something to figure that out this week. It's the beauty of this show. There's always a lot going on in the outdoors in South Carolina. So, look, make time to get out there. Take the back roads when you can. Don't forget your camera. Back next week with more Woods and Water, South Carolina. Get me from behind, 'cause I'm gone, Carolina.